And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. Steve Lehman, News Channel 5.
What's up?
That's him. We'll check in with Willie Donick, who's out in Southern California in the second hour of the program. He's out in Anaheim. Predators and Ducks this evening. 9 o'clock puck drop, a pregame for you starting at 8. Predators looking for win number 9 on the road to start off their season. They are 8-0. They can break the NHL record on this road trip. If they are able to beat the Ducks tonight, the Sharks tomorrow, and finish off the Coyotes in the desert on Thursday and finish up this road trip 5-0, that will be a new NHL record. First team ever to win their first 11 road games.
So the record is 10.
The record is 10 by the Buffalo Sabres in 06-07.
So they could tie it with two more,
could
win
tie
it with all three. A perfect road trip again for this team to start the season. I mean, they've been incredible on the road, and no game illustrates that more than what they did on Saturday afternoon to be down 3-1 after two periods, get three goals in the third. Roman Josi ties it on a beautiful pass from Ryan Johansson. I mean, that was incredible in terms of a dish. 43 seconds to go. You get a point, and you're feeling good. You know, most teams, it's like, woo, we got a point out of this. This is
right.
This is fantastic
playing
effort.
From behind the whole game.
Who cares what happens at this point? Mattias Ekholm goes to the box. Questionable penalty there. You're basically on the kill for the first 2 minutes of overtime, essentially. He comes streaking out of the box, comes in to help, and gets the game winner. Redemption for him. An incredible 2 points for the Predators, and I guess we shouldn't be surprised because they just keep doing it.
They just keep winning. 8-0, but we'll get into all that with Willie Donick, who was also in attendance last night. They're in Southern California, USC hosting Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they came here last year, an exciting game that Vanderbilt lost in overtime. Vanderbilt gets revenge.
Yeah,
they beat the Trojans. Willie was in attendance. So we'll get into – and then he also watched the Titans game with Skillsy yesterday out in Anaheim.
That's probably
so. We'll get into a bunch of stuff. Predators. He was at the Vandy USC game, and of course the Titans game. Because quite honestly, if it wasn't for Vanderbilt, what a weekend this market would have, right?
Yep.
The Vols destroy Kentucky. The Titans destroy the Patriots. Well, yeah, I've seen it my whole life. What? I'm not surprised. Pick six. Who did I take? Tennessee. Seen it my whole life. This is how it works. I get it. I know what I signed up for when I was born there. They haven't won there since what, 80s?
Yeah. Long.
84? Something like that? Long, long time ago. So I'm not surprised.
Not sure I've seen it in my lifetime.
Right.
Actually.
Yeah, I barely remember it. I was kind of young. But the Vols beat up on Kentucky. The Titans shred the Patriots. The Predators, as we just talked about, a come-from-behind win in Dallas. An unbelievable win. And really, Vanderbilt, which was in control most of the game, if they take care of business, what a weekend for this market. But they didn't take care of business.
Yeah, and that's really too bad because I thought Vanderbilt was prepared. I think they came out ready. They led the game much of the way. And in the fourth quarter, lack of execution, and I think some questionable game management, largely from the sideline. Some of it maybe falls on your senior quarterback in there, but they had a chance to finish that game and do what Tennessee did, put themselves within a win of bowl eligibility with two winnable games left on the schedule. Tennessee did that in a surprising way by upsetting Kentucky, kind of a trademark win, landmark win for the program and Jeremy Pruitt at this point. And now Tennessee, here way ahead of schedule for most people, is knocking on the door of getting to a bowl game in Jeremy Pruitt's first season. That's incredible. Vanderbilt had the same opportunity in year 5 for Derek Mason to get there for a second time with this team that's full of veterans, got a veteran quarterback, have maybe the most explosive running back in the conference in Keyshawn Vaughn.
He is ridiculous.
He's fantastic. Here's your opportunity. Here's a game that you have a great chance to win, and early in the fourth quarter, when this is going back and forth, up and down the field on both sides, you have first and goal from the 4-yard line. And I know Keyshawn had a big run right before it, maybe got dinged up a little bit, but you have 4 chances there. He's not on the field until fourth down. not just doesn't get the ball, he's not even on the field until fourth down. Then Missouri sells out on him on fourth down and stuffs him at the goal line. You get no points there.
Diving. I thought he was going to get in.
Missouri goes 99 yards at that point to take the lead for good. You get a ball back off an interception on a short field. You go three and out. Again, Vaughn doesn't touch the ball in those three plays. You then have an opportunity to get a stop late. You let Missouri get down the field where they get into field goal range. Right before the field goal attempt, they throw a completion out of bounds where the guy goes out of bounds with 2:13 left. So above the two-minute mark, which is the automatic, the clock stops when a guy goes out of bounds. It doesn't start on the rewind. At 2:13, it does. Mason isn't paying attention on the sideline. The coaching staff upstairs isn't paying attention. They allow 21 seconds to tick off the clock there when they restart the clock before they use a timeout at that point. So now they used the timeout and they allowed 21 seconds to go off. Amazingly, Missouri misses a chip shot field goal to give them a shot to get down the field. But Vandy, again, throws three passes short of the chains with no timeouts left and let the clock tick and tick and tick and tick. Throw in the 21 seconds earlier, and you end up having to basically throw a Hail Mary from the 30 at the end of the game. They should have had three or four more plays to run at that point, but they just managed the game in a way where it came down to one throw it up and see what happens type of play. I just thought it was inexcusable game management from everybody. Derek Mason, the buck stops with him, but his coaches let him down. His senior quarterback let him down. There are a lot of mistakes from Vanderbilt, and that's how you lose a tight game.
Think about how – I know it's ifs and buts and fill in the – I've heard coconuts, candy nuts, fill in the blank, right? Ifs and buts. Think about some of their games. That's a game you should have won. Think about the two road – let's just talk about two road games in particular. I'm not saying they would have won. I felt if Lipscomb makes that catch in South Bend, they could have won.
Sure.
They could have beaten Notre Dame. They could have easily won Saturday. Now your backs are totally against the wall. Now you have to win these last two home games. Now you have to go out there and beat Ole Miss in Tennessee. That's the only chance you have. And if they don't, it is going to be an interesting offseason, right? Because I don't think anything's going to happen because of the situation right at Vanderbilt. But I think we all know what the storyline will be at SEC Media Days.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I think Derek Mason – I'm with you. I think Derek Mason is safe right now because I can't imagine David Williams' parting shot from the school is, I'm going to fire the football
coach.
Yeah,
it's not happening.
And I'm going to make a new hire right now and make the new AD come in and deal with whoever I decided on. I can't see that happening here in the next month. But I do think what this means is if they don't get to a bowl game and he is back for next year, which I think he will be, all eyes are on Derek Mason, and his seat starts scorching hot. And it will be a year with a much younger quarterback, much younger guys around the team for the most part. It will be a year where it will be put up or shut up. Put up, pack your bags. And he's going to have to prove people wrong, where this was the year where everybody thought, oh, if he gets to a bowl game this year, he's probably good. And you know what? He probably is. If he gets to a bowl game, he's probably safe even through next year.
I would agree.
Under a new
age. And there's no reason they shouldn't be.
Right.
But here's the thing. I mean, you root for him, right?
Because yeah, he's a great guy.
He's a great guy. He loves the program. He loves what he does. He loves his kids. He loves this market. You're rooting for him. But we also know that this is a business. And in this business, you have to win games. And you can't keep going 1-7 or 2-6. In SEC play or over in SEC play and winning 4-5 games a year. You can't do it. I don't care even if whatever stigma you think is attached to Vanderbilt and whether they care or they don't care, you can't. Eventually, you're not going to last even with all that good being said. But now they have put themselves in a really awkward position because Tennessee looks like, oh, wow, they're getting right at the right time. I mean, here they sit 5-5. They have Missouri at home. And they're here against Vanderbilt.
Now, they could win both of them.
Of course they could. We could be talking about a 7-5 team,
which
and
would
I would
amazing.
Have said that was the absolute ceiling of this team. And I would have said probably the ceiling, and I don't think they're going to get there because I said it's going to be a 5 or 6 win team.
Yeah,
That's what they're looking at.
Well, I'm with you. I would have told you in the summer that if everything goes right for Tennessee, 7 wins would be the absolute ceiling for this team. But I'm guessing they don't get there because it's hard to have everything go right. If you have asked me in September, I would have told you the ceiling was more like 4 wins based off of the way they were playing. So all credit to Jeremy Pruitt, who I've been critical at the way he's handled some of the things that he's done in his first season there, but all credit to him and his coaching staff for keeping that team together when they were struggling early on and it looked like more of the same just under a new staff, because they've gotten better every single week. And, you know, it looked like Auburn was going to be sort of the signature win for him in year one. Well, he just beat that by beating Kentucky. And now Tennessee has 2 top 20 wins under Jeremy Pruitt in his first season as a head coach. That, like, equals the number they had in the previous decade. It's amazing.
And that Garantano, he's not very good, right? I mean, Keller Chris should be in there. Just ask a lot of the fans, right? They know. I mean, give me a break.
They got it right.
I mean, figure it out. If you can't figure out how good Garantano is, then you just need to stop making comments, okay? Just sit back as a fan and stop making comments. If you can't figure out how good Garantano is and how he gives you a chance to win, and oh, by the way, he's exactly what you want from a quarterback, a guy who can throw, a guy who can take a lick and just keep on ticking, and oh, by the way, doesn't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
Boy, that's just a horrible thing.
That's
horrible
a pretty
traits.
Good recipe.
Horrible, horrible traits for your starting quarterback. Yeah, let's get the backup in there. That's really intelligent. All right, we'll come back. We'll go to Knoxville in the third hour of the program. Buck Rising, tackling Music City. We'll talk about the big win at Nissan Stadium here in the first hour. Titans destroy the Patriots. We'll discuss it next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The roast we win, you know, especially when you used to be there and they didn't want to bring you back. So definitely real sweet. I'm happy my teammates came out and played, and I love these guys.
So it is a little personal.
Hell yeah, it's personal. That's what happens when you go cheap. You get your ass kicked.
You want to win each and every game, but I'm pretty sure, you know, you're going into details when you used to, you know, play for that organization. But I most definitely wanted to beat those guys, and we did. I'm pretty sure Logan, Dion, and Mike Vrabel too. So, you know, the key in this league is just winning. So glad we got the win.
That's what it felt like yesterday over at Nissan Stadium. Well, at least for the Titans fans. Dan Fouts was perplexed that there were Patriots fans in the stadium. Has he ever done a Patriots game?
Titans game?
Yeah, thank you. Good. Thanks for clarifying that. Dan.
Either way.
Have you done Titans games? Answer, yes. Have you done Patriots games? I'm assuming, yes. They kind of travel well, and that's how it works here when you get a full stadium. It usually takes 25,000 of the opposition for it to be packed. So I'm not sure what he meant. Now, that first clip you heard was Deion Lewis. We'll get into that in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5, alongside Tackling Music City. He's the host. Buck Rising, when he walked in the studio, and I quote, his first words out of his mouth to both of us was, "Wow, that was a weird one." And I laughed, and I was like, of all the things I expected you to say, "Wow, that was a weird one," was not one of them.
That is what we call hashtag analysis. That was a weird one. Football.
It was a weird one.
Football, man, that's weird. The Titans aren't supposed to beat the Patriots. That's not how this stuff works, right?
Well, I mean,
what
is
that?
It is very unpredictable.
What
NFL.
Did I watch yesterday? Yes, the NFL. The NFL's weird.
Okay.
That was a weird one.
In all seriousness, it is hard to figure things out. Like, how do you – like, so now they've beat – both teams are in the Super Bowl last year.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They just came off beating Dallas Monday Night Football at their place.
Yes.
By the way, the Cowboys went to Philly last night and beat the Eagles on Sunday Night Football.
Short week. Vrabel said they slept on air mattresses in the facility for the entire week. He made it sound like they hadn't seen their families in like days.
Right. And then you lose to the Bills and you lose to the Dolphins.
Yes.
None of this stuff makes sense. But here is the serious question. How do you look like this the last 2 weeks? Like, how come it can't be more, or maybe it will be the rest of the way? I don't know what your answer is going to be, but why can't it look like this more often than not? Like, why have we had this roller coaster ride with this team, this roller coaster ride with our conversations every week with you, right? It's always, What is this? Why can't they do this? Why does it look like this? Oh my gosh, this isn't happening. This draft pick isn't working out. And then today, it's the all-time high of everything's great. Everything's working out.
That's the most complete game I think I've seen a Tennessee Titans team play. And I've only been here for 3 years, so that's my sample size. It's not a big one. But from the start of that game where Darius Jennings is returning the opening kickoff for 58 yards and he's setting up the offense to where they can go seven plays down the field and score right away. The first opening scoring drive for the offense, not counting Byard's touchdown pass to Crookshank of the season, that was. After that return, we can see this on a more consistent basis. I think that we're going to. Now, part of that is because Tom Brady looked 41 years old yesterday. He did not look very good.
He did not throw a touchdown pass.
He was not sharp.
He looked disinterested. Once they got down, he looked like he just wanted to get back on the bus and go home.
When he just – I forget who hit him towards probably midway through the third quarter, and he just sat there on the ground for a while and just kind of slumped.
This when Wesley Woodyard was crawling on the field?
I think that's right, and Tom Brady's body language just looked to be that of someone who wasn't having a good time anymore and didn't want to be there. They did. They were great. They were great at pressuring him. It was as complete – a coaching job and a performance by a team that I've seen since covering the team. They're building on their progress from week to week. I think that you can go back to the Chargers game, particularly on offense, and point out that is the starting point where, okay, this is starting to look like a professional football team in 2018. Like the offense is starting to build upon the concepts that are working for them. They're figuring out how to deploy these guys correctly, i.e. Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis and now Jonnu Smith, who's starting to be more productive in the offense the past 2 weeks.
You thought we'd be talking about Jonnu Smith today.
I mean, and I said this yesterday on Twitter, good for him, man. Like, he works every day after practice out at the jugs machine with the quarterback, and, like, he was non-existent on the football field for the first 7 weeks, and now it's good to see somebody like that who has worked.
So why is it happening? Why now?
They're getting better. I mean,
no, why is it happening for him?
For Jonnu?
Yeah.
I think he's just tried to work. He's tried to play himself in it rather than play himself out of the role. The same way that we're talking about with Malcolm Butler. You can't just pull him out of the lineup, otherwise it's a wash.
I'm going to offer a couple theories for you.
Yes.
One, Marcus Mariota's fully healthy. And when Marcus Mariota's fully healthy,
ooh,
he's a pretty good quarterback.
That touchdown pass, Steve, to Corey Davis. Woo!
That was pretty. Ooh. You can't throw a ball any better than that. I mean, he threw it so well and stuck it in there so well that Corey Davis was getting mauled as it got to him, and he still had no choice other than to catch it. That's how well thrown that ball was.
It was perfect.
Marcus Mariota, when healthy, is a quarterback that can win in this league and lead you to victories in this league. I think he was getting there in London, and he played a pretty good game. I think he's fully there after the bye week, and he's been phenomenal in these two games. Since the bye, about 70% completion percentage, just shy of 500 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, also ran for a TD in Dallas. I think the other thing that's there is they've stopped trying to force Derrick Henry. I think at the beginning of the year, they felt the need, because of where he was drafted and the expectations about him around here, that they had to make him the number one back. They're better when Deion Lewis is the primary guy in the backfield because he can do so much more.
Say it for the people in the back, Steve.
They are better when Deion Lewis is the primary back in the backfield. And guess what? That doesn't mean he needs all the carries. Derrick Henry was the guy leading the rushing charge in the second half yesterday when they were trying to run out the clock and wear on them. And it worked very well. He ran for almost 60 yards. He had 2 touchdowns in the game. It's nice. But when Lewis is back there, his versatility – couple that with a healthy Mariota, and all of a sudden, I think what we've seen in the last two games is the entire playbook is at Matt LaFleur's disposal. They're testing the ball down the field. They're spreading it out to numerous wide receivers. They're using Mariota's legs at times. They're using Lewis in a variety of facets. They're bringing in Henry to be a bulldozer here and there. We're seeing the entire offense now, I think, for the first time.
All right, let me ask both of you this then. With that being said, if Llewellyn doesn't leave the game with the injury, does Derrick Henry have the finish that he did?
That's a tough one to answer.
Because to me, it looked like it was going toward Llewellyn.
They gave him 3 straight carries.
Right, like it was going Lewis, and then the next option was going to be Llewellyn because, oh, by the way, he did have a gain of, what, 12 yards on the one run?
Everybody on Twitter, flu season, flu season, flu season. Oh, flu season.
Mm.
Yeah. Knee injury.
They got their flu shot.
Yeah. It was not pleasant.
But if he doesn't get hurt, was the direction going toward Flewellen and not Henry?
I think that you would have seen Henry to some degree. It may not have been quite as much at the end, but they're going to run out the clock with that guy at the end. Like, if that's the way that they're going to try and deploy him, where you know that you just have to get enough yardage, that you're not worried about chunk plays, you're not worried about going down the field, Derrick Henry's going to get touches at the end of games for the Tennessee Titans. And, I mean, Deion Lewis and Flewellen, if he's healthy, are going to get some of that mix. They're just trying – they're like Steve and I are talking about, they're trying to work everybody in, sure, and they're seeing who fits in certain situations. They did a really, really fantastic job of that yesterday.
We'll never know the answer to that question because, obviously, he got hurt, so we're not going to see it moving forward in all likelihood. But remember, in the Chargers game, in the second half, they went to Flewellen – for three straight carries, and everybody was like, "What? Where is this coming from?" And then Deion Lewis came right back in, and the next series Derrick Henry was in, and we never saw Flewellen in the backfield again. So I don't know whether that was a signal of maybe a shift coming. I don't know whether that was just, we put in a few plays for this guy this week that are his plays, and here's the time we're going to use it. I don't know, but I don't think we can make any wholesale guesses on the short sample there.
What stood out to you the most, other than the domination of the Patriots? What's something that during the course of the game you're like, wow, I can't believe I just witnessed that? What would that answer be?
That they completely outcoached Bill Belichick and that staff. I would say on both sides of the ball, defensively certainly, because if you go back and watch the Patriots, certainly in the Green Bay game and even in the game before that, I mean, they weren't playing all that well. Like, in the Green Bay game, they're having to use some of this trick play BS, and they're getting some fumble luck, and there were things that were there to be exploited, and I think Dean Pease did a fantastic job taking advantage of what he saw on film, and making Brady look worse than he had in previous weeks. I was supremely impressed with the way that defense played. I mean, the thing that everybody talks about is bring pressure in Brady's face up the A-gap. Mm-hmm. They did that consistently. They did that with different guys running free at him. Logan Ryan was in there a couple times. Jayon Brown. I have a weekly Jayon Brown appreciation tweet. That dude is good. That dude is really good at football. He's got a really, really high ceiling, a fifth-round pick or not. And I think they did a fantastic job making Brady look old.
Okay, I've got several answers, but what's your answer, Steve?
It's a little bit similar. I thought they did a great job coaching yesterday, but I also thought that as we all sort of sat there in the press box or in the stands, I think looked at each other and said, is this actually happening? Are they up by 14? Are they up by 17? You know, whatever. I saw a team on the field that expected to do that. I saw a team that played with a swagger yesterday that looked like when they hit the field that they thought they were going to beat the Patriots, a team that embarrassed them, frankly, in the playoffs so many months ago. And I don't know whether that all comes from Vrabel or the players, but they played that way, and I think the most perfect example is late in the game, the Patriots completely desperate because they have nothing going on. They try a reverse pass back to Tom Brady.
Oh.
He stumbles. He's never looked more 41 than he did on that play. Falls short of the first down marker. Ultimately, the Titans get a fourth down stop there. The first play of the next series, the Titans run the same play to Mariota for 21 yards. It was sort of like, you guys can do it out of desperation.
If that was an in-your-face moment.
We're just going to do it for fun, yeah, and we're going to make it work.
Matt LaFleur is now the troll god. He is a trolling god. That was a trolling masterclass yesterday, what he did to Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Yeah. It was spectacular.
Mine is two-part. Mine is the entire game I kept waiting for. Okay, when's the comeback going to happen, right? When is the comeback? It's like, I go back to use a basketball reference. When MTSU knocked off Michigan State, the entire game, I kept going, when's the comeback coming? When are the Spartans going to take over this game? Like, this has been cool to watch MTSU in control the entire game in this first round, you know, Goliath or David versus Goliath matchup. MTSU never trailed. They never gave it up. They won the game and never trailed. I kept waiting for the comeback, and then I realized the comeback wasn't going to happen, which I didn't think was possible with the Patriots game. And then to cap it off, the second part of this is for Bill Belichick to literally wave the white flag. I mean, he waved the white flag, and they said, we're on to our bye week. They pulled Tom Brady. They pulled everybody out, and they just said, we're moving on to next week, which is a bye week. We'll see you on the other side. Like, that was the biggest. There are other answers, but that was probably my biggest takeaway from the game is I kept waiting for the comeback the entire game, and then I finally got to a point where I said, wow, the comeback isn't going to happen. And then I realized shortly after that, Bill Belichick was over there with the white flag going, okay, we're done. Like, we just pulled the ripcord. We are done.
I'm watching.
On Veterans Day, we pulled the ripcord.
Well done. Well done.
No, you don't get. I'm not giving you credit for that.
What does it take?
That joke sucked.
All right, we're coming back. We're going to take a break. I'm going to work on some more stuff.
We'll do better on the
other side. More with Buck Rising tackling Music City. By the way, if you want to jump into our discussion, 737-1025, 737-1025. We'll also take your calls this hour as well. More coming on Darren and Donnie.
I think that every week in this league is a new challenge, and I think that they understand that now. I really do. We're coming off the field, and they're in the tunnel, and guys are like, man, hey, on to the next one, on to the Colts. And I really appreciate that now they understand, as great as this was and as good as this feels, that it's still a long season, and, you know, we haven't really accomplished anything.
Mike Vrabel, he'll talk to the media at 11:45 today. We'll have some of that press conference later in the show. Trying to establish the culture of that win was great, but guys, there's another game, and then there's another game after that, and so forth and so on. They've already had their bye week, so they're just going to keep playing games. So you can't get too high, you can't get too low. He's trying to set that culture that he was accustomed to with probably his time in New England, right? That's the way they operate.
Well, you know, when that wasn't the case earlier this season, right? When they had the massive win over the other team that was in the Super Bowl last year, the champs, the Eagles, and came back the next week when no one thought they could lose and went to Buffalo and laid an egg. And at the time, we kind of looked at it like, gosh, this is the same old Titans, because I don't care whether it was Jeff Fisher or Mike Munchak or, I mean, Ken Whisenhunt never got a big win, but
opening day he did.
Okay.
He was good on opening day.
And they lost
the other 15 games.
Right.
He always struggled with the other 15.
Exactly. And then they lost the next week, so I guess it proves the point. But Mike Mularkey on down, it just looked like the same old team. Like, you're capable of rising up and having a great performance, but you're equally likely to lose to someone you shouldn't lose to the next week. And they did earlier this season.
In fairness, Vrabel
was. So we'll find out now.
He was planting the seed that Monday. That Monday press conference, he was already talking about the Bills and, you know, we got to focus on the – I mean, it was like he had already moved on from the Eagles. Everybody's still caught up in the win over the Eagles, and he was already planting the seed of, yeah, we're going to Buffalo. And we're all going, yeah, and? Right? Yeah. Have you watched the Bills?
Yeah, and. No, I mean, you could tell that from the jump that's how they wanted them to think about this, because the – and it was an observation by Travis Haney, our friend at The Athletic. It was just – the mood in the locker room was like we talked about with LaJuan, like almost borderline relief, you know, that we got past this one. Now we're on to Indianapolis, which is not an easy game because Andrew Luck is out here shredding teams with a surgically repaired shoulder. And that, I don't know if anybody else saw that Quentin Nelson hype video this morning on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's just out here stealing guys. So, like Barry Church, man. I don't know what Barry Church has to do to get off the schneid, because once Marcus Mariota gets him with a stiff arm, and then he is the victim of a Quentin Nelson just body slam. But they are trying to get them to the point where it's just, they're just handling this like the Patriots do, where it's just another game where we are literally on to Indianapolis, and it's just going to be the next game up.
And their record is very good against Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. They've never beaten him.
Never won.
Let's go to Al. Al, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, buddy? This is Big Al.
Big Al, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm fine. Is Willie there?
Willie is in Anaheim. He'll join us next
hour. I want to congratulate you Titans on a victory. You kicked my Patriots' butts. But only time I root against the Titans when they play the Patriots. But here's something I want the Titans fans to realize. Stop bashing Corey Davis. He's a monster. against the Eagles, he destroyed the Eagles. After that, they started double-teaming him. New England didn't double-team him. And what did he do to New England? Destroyed them.
Okay.
The Titans have a very good team. Get used to winning.
That's actually a really good point.
Well, get used to winning.
Get used to winning. I
Big
like
Al,
that.
Big Al, good to hear from you.
Well done, Big Al.
Let's go do that, because it's very clear that Corey Davis likes playing the Patriots. He's definitely responded playing the Patriots in his short career.
He was really, really good yesterday.
Well, and he was good in the playoffs. I mean, he was their lone bright spot in the playoff game. But once again, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, okay, 7 catches, 125 yards, and a touchdown. Why can't it look like this every week? Why hasn't it looked like this every week? Why can't he have big games week in and week out?
Davis, listen, Darren, I think we are getting to the point where this is what it's going to look like more consistently. I truly do believe that. I mean, because this was not going to be a microwave offense. Like, this was something that was going to take some time. And I remember talking about this ad nauseum throughout the season. Like, people are going to have to be patient with how this plays out. And I really do think that we are starting to see where they're hitting their stride at probably the most important stretch, when they need to beat teams that they are capable of beating, like the Dallas Cowboys, in a game that was imminently winnable, even as they tried to lose that in the first quarter. Now you have Indianapolis twice. You have already split with Jacksonville, who seems to be an absolute tire fire at this point, and Houston, who has a really good quarterback and a really good defense, but an offensive line that is consistently trying to get that quarterback killed. So you have and the Jets and the Giants, like, and Washington, like, all of these are winnable games. So you are starting to hit the point where you're playing your best football when it starts to matter, and this is a incredibly critical stretch for the Tennessee Titans, because all of these games are winnable. You just proved that you could beat the New England Patriots. Go out there and do this.
And the next two are division foes, which could go a long ways.
Very long ways.
Big Al, baby. Learn how to win. I like that.
I mean, if the Titans win both of these games the next 2 weeks, they would be 7-4.
And your division
as
leader.
As they go into December, they'd be 4-0 in the division. I mean,
right.
it would be virtually impossible to get caught at that point, because they'd have the sweep against the Texans, who would be the most likely team to catch them. So, I mean, at that point...
Well, you don't take the tiebreakers. We know
exactly.
that.
So you just take care of business in the month of December, and you're going to win the division. And that should still be the goal for this team. They can get there through the wild card, but the goal absolutely should be to win the division. And for that reason, these next 2 weeks are critically important.
I just would like to see, because the Dallas game, he had, what, 50, 56 yards receiving. Why can't it look like this, where he's going for over 100 every week? I mean, I think, one, he should be targeted 10 times a game. I don't think there's anything wrong with targeting your number one receiver 10 times a game. I mean, that's not too much to ask.
I do think he gets some level of attention that other guys on the field don't for the Titans right now. So I'm not sure it's realistic to expect him to get 100 yards a game. I'm not going to complain about the passing effort in Dallas. He didn't have all the yards, but they distribute it to 9 different guys.
Yeah.
Mariota was very, very efficient. If that's what the passing game looks like every week, by all means, go ahead and do it.
He doesn't have to shred people statistically. Like, as long as he shows up in critical points where it matters, like the touchdown pass, I just watched that again, and Gilmore is draped all over him, and he hangs on for one of the pretty – and that one catch at the end of the game, I can't remember the down and distance situation, where he goes up in the air and just contorts his body in a
the
way to catch
down,
that
yeah.
football. Why, it was insane. Like, he is a freak athlete. Like, he just needs to make those critical big plays that you need. It doesn't have to be 100, 150 yards a game. He just has to be able to make plays. That's what you need in this offense.
Well, as a starting receiver on my fantasy team, I would like for it to look a lot like
yesterday.
You are so
selfish.
I know. I am. I agree. Justin, you're up next. Welcome in. I'm not going to argue.
What's going on, guys? How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I'm doing good. Here's a couple things, man. I feel like in the locker room, Vrabel gave one heck of a speech. And I know he emphasized the importance of this win. He made it personal for not only him, but for Deion Lewis and Malcolm Butler. And I think the team corralled around that. Also, this is one of the first games I've seen in a while that the Titans actually played and actually looked like they were just having fun out there. and I think that's a good thing. But I also think that could be a bad thing to this point, because usually if the Titans are having fun and they're having a good game, egg is about to be laid. We're seeing Luck, who's coming back like the Bionicle Man, with that new arm of his, and he's just shredding it up. And I'm a little scared. And one question I have for you guys.
Did you say you're a little scared?
I'm a little scared. He's looking like the Winter Soldier in Captain America right now.
he's like a nerdy Winter Soldier.
with
a gland problem.
But my question is, you know, I woke up this morning, I'm excited to turn on ESPN and, you know, to listen to what they have to say about the Titans. But the last 2 weeks on these great wins, they pretty much talk about the team that lost rather than the team that won. And my question is to you guys, how many wins or what is it going to take for the media, like ESPN, to really just recognize the Titans?
Oh, Justin, don't go Taylor Lewan on us.
Justin, listen to me.
There's two words. Listen, two words. Who cares? Who cares? Mm. Honestly. What does that do for you? What does that do for everybody else? So they're talking about the Titans. What does that mean? Yeah. Who cares? Don't worry about what they're talking about. Who cares? Well, does that make you feel good because ESPN is warm and fuzzy about the Titans? Who cares?
And I've got an even more realistic answer for you, Justin. It's just not going to happen. The television numbers don't dictate that the Tennessee Titans be talked about. Like, you're going to lose that battle every time.
You know how they'll talk about you? Go to the
just
playoffs.
Keep winning.
Go to the playoffs.
Win.
It's the same thing, the speech I gave 2 years ago when the Predators were in the playoffs and people were bellyaching why everybody was picking the Blackhawks in the first round. I said, who cares? You know how you get talked about? You know how you get the respect? You just go win.
Yeah.
And guess what? When they won, are we having that discussion anymore about the Predators? No.
Justin, actually.
Titans win a division, keep playing January football every year. Guess what? They'll get talked about more. That's how it works.
Justin actually answered his question with the first part of his answer by saying he's scared about this weekend. That's the problem, is we've all seen this happen too much, where the Titans rise up and have a big win, and then they promptly lay an egg against somebody they shouldn't. And for that reason, the people here don't totally believe the Titans are for real, and don't watch in the numbers that dictate national networks to talk about them all the time. And so until that changes, until they go to Indianapolis this weekend and take care of business like they did yesterday and make everybody forget about the eggs of the past, until they do that, we're going to keep having this conversation.
Why would a 5-4 team be front and center for the national stage?
Because everybody's 5-4.
They're 5-4. I mean, what extra credit do they deserve? Yeah, they beat the Patriots, but I mean, you move them to the front of the line because they're a 5-4 football team?
Darren, people just want to matter, man. Like, I get it. Like,
right. How do you matter, Buck?
Win.
Thank you.
Win, I know. But, you know, not everybody's getting. I mean, I feel for the guy who wants to turn on ESPN, he wants to see his team, and then nobody cares.
Guess what, Justin? Turn on ESPN Radio, and you'll get all the coverage you can handle.
Hello, here.
Hello, Justin. We'll come back, wrap up the first hour next.
Yeah, I'm happy to get above 500. I'm happy to get above 500. It's a good football team that we played today and that we beat. Very fortunate. But again, those players, just like me and Dean and everybody else that spent time there, John, you learned a lot from the people there, from Mr. Kraft down to Bill and his staff. But, you know, we're together here with the Titans, and we're really proud to be a part of this organization. You know, I'll say this. The one thing that Bill always said was that it's an honor and a privilege to coach and play in this league. And I'll never forget that as a player. And then now, to be able to be in this position as a head coach in this league, that he always treated it with a lot of respect, the fact that we work in this league and the history that's behind it.
To your point, Buck, it's not really about the haves and the have-nots in the NFL. It's more about the middle class, right? Because in a lot of places, like I went to Jamaica this summer, and it's really, when you go around the island of Jamaica, it's about the rich and the poor. There's like not much in between. It's either you're rich or you're poor. The NFL is really about the middle class, right? I mean, there's some few haves that we know are having tremendous seasons. There's some have-nots. The Raiders, boy, they stink.
They're pretty bad.
tonight's Monday night game, two teams that stink.
Ugh. That's such a bad draw, man. But and Witten, oh, no.
But everybody else is just right there lumped in the middle, right? The middle class.
I mean, the sport, it's why the Patriots are so fascinating of a case study, because the sport is built for parity. Like, everybody else is pretty equal in terms of talent, and they just continue to win every year, even though the structure is inherently built to keep everybody the same. Yeah, no, most teams outside of the anomalies like Kansas City and like Los Angeles, even though, or the Rams rather, the Rams look like they have a few holes like that can be exploited.
Oh, you mean like Marcus Peters?
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of gets burnt a lot.
Sure.
But kind he likes of like, the, kind of likes like our.
Go ahead.
Kind of like our discussion about Malcolm Butler. So yes. Why didn't we see 21 running down the field as fast as he can, chasing somebody? Why did the secondary look so good yesterday against the Patriots?
I mean, the coverage, the way that the coverage was working in conjunction with the rush and the pressure and the blitzes that they were dialing up, and in terms of situational football, they were working all really well in conjunction with one another. Having Kenny Vaccaro back is a huge help. Kenny Vaccaro is a really, really good player. I talked about it with people who scouted him coming when he was a draft prospect, and even in New Orleans where people felt like he was being almost misused or coached down to a degree, like there was more talent there than what was being let on. I think they've done a really good job with Kenny Vaccaro.
Adoree Jackson was awesome.
Adoree Jackson was spectacular. And Malcolm Butler, they did a good job if they weren't hiding him. I mean, he played well yesterday. It's not like they were doing things to – you can't just hide players like that, especially over the course of the game of a game like that, especially against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady.
Sure.
They're going to find you. He played well. It's just a matter of him getting more comfortable.
Josh Gordon was targeted 12 times. He caught 4 balls.
Right.
And they were great.
And almost – only one of them was against Adoree Jackson, and he drew the Josh Gordon assignment most of the day, deterring passes from even being attempted in that direction, but also having great coverage when they came in that direction. He did a phenomenal job. I think something I noticed is right from the jump yesterday, a lot of the Patriots' offense is they try to throw short things, wide receiver screens, running back screens, things like that, that are relatively short, high percentage balls, and get a guy in space where he turns a 4-yard pass into an 11-yard gain kind of thing. The Patriots did that at will against the Titans last year in the playoffs in Foxborough. Yesterday, the Titans defense jumped all of those balls, and maybe it would get completed, but it would go for 4 yards. There was nothing after the catch when they did that. That meant the Patriots then had to start looking down the field, and guess what? When you look at their receiver core, the only guy who's really great at getting separation is Gordon. He's the only guy that's a real burner in that regard. And guess what? The Titans just plastered Adoree Jackson to him, and he never got space the entire afternoon.
They talk about that James plaster White. Defense all the time, man. And they were great at it yesterday. They held up in coverage, and that's what led to more pressure on Brady. It was complimentary football.
How much did we talk about James White last week leading up to the game?
A lot.
Really wasn't that much of a factor at all, right?
Haven't talked about him at all today.
We talked more about the Patriots taking away your best threats. Well, the Titans took away their best threats. Yeah. Really, when you think James White is the guy who's been carving everybody up. Sony Michel played. Gronk obviously didn't play. And then Dwayne Allen left the game. But, I mean, to see – and that's another thing. We talked about Tom Brady only getting the pressure. You know, teams have backed off pressuring Tom Brady. And the Titans didn't do that. Do you think everybody around the league took notice and they're going to approach the Patriots differently the rest of the way?
They should.
They
because
absolutely
Brady
should.
Is the lowest rated quarterback in the National Football League against the blitz this season. That's hard to imagine, but he is by the numbers. And so I don't know whether the Titans knew that beforehand or everybody else needs to pay attention to it now, because the Titans brought pressure, and the numbers both before the game and then watching the game yesterday tell you that Tom Brady doesn't want to see pressure. He does not want to see the blitz and extra guys coming. And what happened yesterday, to Buck's point, is the coverage held up well enough that they took away his first read. I think they also took away his safety valve. And then there was pressure coming, and Brady doesn't like to live in the middle there. He wants to get it out quick, or he wants to have a guy that's his safe option, and he wants to avoid getting hit. The Titans took away both of those options, and he was just left in the middle, either trying to scan the field while avoid having guys come in and lay the wood on them.
Like, I'm watching this, and as soon as they stopped the most unstoppable play in all of sports, the Brady 1 yard sneak, they're going to win the game. That was the deciding moment.
He did look 41 yesterday. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Was not having a good day.
They decide, and look, there's anybody that understands the best way to attack the Patriots from the defensive side of the ball, it should be the Titans defensive coordinator and the Titans head coach, right? I mean, they probably have a unique perspective, especially Mike Vrabel.
Sure.
So, I mean, it played out. Another thing, when you talk about the reads, let's go back to Mariota. Does it not seem like – I realize it looks good. It's been these last three games in particular, even though one was in a loss. It does look like Mariota is becoming very comfortable in the system, and he is going through his progressions, right? I mean, that's the thing that stood out to me. You said scanning the field, looking at his reads. Mariota, I felt like before the game in London, if what they were doing wasn't there, he didn't know what to do or he would just take off, right? Where I feel like
very
now,
tentative.
Like there was a couple times yesterday, he had the opportunity that in week three, he would have just pulled up and taken off, and he didn't. He waited it out. It wasn't there, and he ended up making a play because he stood there in the pocket, shifted it around a little bit, bought himself a little bit of time, and then made the correct throw. Have you guys noticed that as well?
He has good timing and good vision the past couple weeks. It was a concern with him through the first 6 weeks of the season or the first six games that he played, not counting the game that he missed against the Houston Texans in week two. He didn't look to be seeing everything that was out in front of him. Like, he looked to be holding the ball. Like, there was, again, that hesitancy, that uncomfortableness, if that's even a word, that he was displaying. And that's something, again, that I come back to, part of the offensive install. We talked to Dan Orlovsky earlier in the year, and he was saying that this is something that is working against a quarterback's inherent mechanics, and it's going to take you a minute to get totally comfortable with what you're being asked to do. But then once you're there, it's second nature, and you start rolling off. I mean, you start to get rolling once you start to buy into what they're asking you to do schematically and mechanically. And I think this is what we're starting to see. It's starting to build upon success that they've had in previous weeks. And his comfort level and his confidence is growing with it as they see more success from it. There are still things that you can nitpick from yesterday where it looked like a predetermined read. I'm pretty sure it was Deion Lewis where Corey Davis was just running wide open in the flat and Marcus just didn't see him. Because he was staring a guy down. But those are things that are going to happen. It's football.
Or a third and, what was it, 7 and 8, and you throw a 2-yard pass.
Yeah, there's some of that.
Although the one thing I would say about that is though, the Titans lead the league in third down and long conversions this year, so they've very rarely done that. Yesterday it happened, but sometimes the defense dictates where you go.
Yeah. Good stuff. He's the host of Tackling Music City. He's Buck Rising. Podcast drops today, Wednesday, 2 hours live on Friday.
From Indianapolis.
From Indy. Yeah. Oh.
That's a home game, baby.
Imagine that. You're going back to Indy.
I am. Wow. Go Hoosiers.
You're going to do it from where?
From 1070
from
the
Mom's
Fan.
Basement?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Check that out Friday.
Me and Mom. Guest co-host.
She's going to make an appearance.
Big Karen Rising. Yeah.
All right.
Plays no games.
I bet she does.
The Mike Francesa. The next.
Check that out. Is that the example you really
want
to use?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a good.
No, I wouldn't use that.
Back after this.
Note for your mom.
Buck Rising, check out his podcast, Tackling Music City. He joins us every Monday in the first hour of the program. We'll come back. We'll head out west. We'll check in with Willie Donick, who's in Anaheim. We do that to kick off the second hour of Darren and Donick next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.